I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman.
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 There is a song the good folks sing.
Song the good folks sing.
Batman.
About a hero on the wing.
Hero on the wing.
Batman.
I am Gotham's darkest night, the villain's darkest fright. Turn on the signal light.
For Batman.
Welcome in all once again to Nerds on the Rocks episode 179. We have a very special show lined up for you, but before we get there, let's introduce our cast of Robins. We have Dan.
Rachel.
We have Justin.
Person.
And we have James.
What? So if we're all Robins, do I get to be Carrie Kelly?
I mean, if you want to be, we don't judge on this show.
I'm taking that as a yes.
Why do you want to be her?
Because she was special, because she only had to appear once.
Doesn't she appear in the Dark Knight Rises again, or doing Dark Knight Returns again, I should say?
I'm pretty sure we don't acknowledge that, so it doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, if she's that good, she appeared in something you don't want to talk about, and you want to be her?
Yes, because of the Dark Knight Returns. I assume since we're all Robins, then we're each getting assigned Robin.
Which one am I?
You can be Tim Drake.
Which one?
No. I was the first Robin to be named. Don't I get to be the first one?
Fine. Then you get to be Dick Grayson, and then Justin is Tim Drake.
Tim Drake sucks.
Wait, who's the one who got to be... Who's the one who was Robin for, like, 4 minutes, and then she became Batgirl?
Stephanie Brown.
Yeah, Justin, you can be Stephanie Brown.
I don't want to be Stephanie Brown.
Too bad.
Too late.
Wait, as you might have guessed, this is our Robcast. We're talking about all the different superhero sidekicks throughout history.
Yep. I saw a Robin outside one day.
That would actually be
like the bird, or someone dressed up as the character.
Both. Did they die?
That would actually be a pretty fun episode, but they don't do sidekicks like they used to anymore.
No, but they don't. I think someone described it once that they were around a bunch in the 40s as basically to let the kids who are reading them feel like the superhero was replacing their absent father who was fighting in the war.
Yes, thank you. I also watched
it. It's surprisingly dark.
Yeah, and that's why Cap had Bucky and Batman had Robin and everyone else who I can't remember had sidekicks.
Has any superhero ever had a crippled sidekick?
Me.
Does Oracle count?
Oracle would count.
Asking the podcast.
Because she wasn't the sidekick when she got crippled, though.
What about Xavier? She was like his only hero.
She was Batgirl.
I just feel like Ninja came in and asked about crippled people. I just leave the podcast after that one question. Just come in, ask the one question, and just...
And here's right out. Brown, Sam Neill.
Yes.
I don't get that joke. I'm going to have to Google that. I'm not a comics nerd.
But
watch Stephanie Brown isn't a comic character or something. I don't know.
She is the fourth.
Okay, fine. And you can be Kyle Chandler Robin.
No, we're not doing the Kyle Chandler stuff again.
Anyway,
this isn't a Robin cast. This is a sidekick cast. No, this is a Batman cast. Because as of this recording, July 23rd.
Well, a Robin cast would be like the least listened to podcast ever.
How Robin doesn't suck.
Robin's an interesting character because it gets to evolve more than Batman does, actually.
The only thing that's Robin in this podcast is we're robbing time from the big black man, if you know what I'm saying.
Ayo!
But yes, it is Batman Day. It is Batman's 75th anniversary, premiering, I think, in 1939. I mean, technically, I believe his first appearance was back in March, but DC has dubbed July 23rd as Batman Day, so... This is the week we're celebrating Batman.
Happy Batman Day. Jason Bateman all around.
Yes, and he doesn't look a day over 30 most of the time. But, yes, we are
Patrick
doing...
Patrick Bateman, the guy in a...
Who ends up playing Batman.
who ends up playing Batman. Happy Patrick Bateman Day. That's a foreshadowing to actual Bateman.
Yeah, I think it was one of the roles that actually ended him the role of Batman in the Nolan trilogy. But
that chainsaw scene, just like the chainsaw scene from everyone's favorite Batman movie, am I right?
Scarface, right?
Before you Scarface too young for a movie to be anybody's favorite movie.
They take the fascist implications of Batman to the logical extreme in Scarface.
I didn't know Val Kilmer played Batman.
Oh, you are
am I spoiling something later in the podcast? Sorry,
no,
I'm just kind of going.
You're a yucky kid, then. That means you've never seen Batman Forever.
Neither have I.
Oh, come on. Batman Forever is better than Batman and Robin.
Oh, it's better than Batman and Robin, but...
It's better than Batman and Robin. I don't like Man of Steel, and it's better than Batman and Robin.
I was about to say, there are no Batman movies worse than Batman and Robin. I mean, that's not really a barometer that you want to say something on. Batman Forever.
I think I might have a controversial opinion for the second best Batman movie, though, but we might get to that later.
Second best or second worst?
Second best.
Well, what I'm kind of curious to hear what this is now. I don't know if any of them are controversial.
Okay, well, of course my pick for the best is The Dark Knight, and for second best I'd go with the 60s Batman movie.
That's a fine and reasonable answer.
Okay.
If you're a loser...
I was just terrified people would get annoyed if I admit I don't like the other two Nolan Batmans that much.
Well, that is, you have a problem, but, you know.
Yeah,
okay.
I like about a
third of Batman Begins, and then a half of Dark Knight Rises.
Is it the third where he's not actually Batman?
Yeah. When they're just exploring.
Val Kilmer was Batman Forever?
Is that the one with the
Tommy Lee Jones.
Who played the Riddler?
Jim Carrey.
Yeah,
it was Two-Face.
Oh, I didn't know that was Val Kilmer. Okay. Anyway, I thought that was George Clooney.
He's a bit
George
different
Clooney's
now,
Neil.
But
yeah, the mask actually without
confusing
without
considering Billy Dee Williams played Harvey Dent in the original '89 Batman film, partially as a hope that he would get to play Two-Face later on.
Well, I don't think it was a hope. I think he was promised a role. I think Two-Face was supposed to be in Batman Returns, and they decided to go a different direction. Because Tim Burton was kind of weird back then, and somehow he's gotten weird over time.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was kind of weird back then. Have you seen him lately?
Yeah, so...
So are we not counting animated movies in this? Live-action Batman?
We can talk about any Batman.
We're talking about every Bateman.
I was about to say, I'm talking about anything. We haven't actually gone into this topic.
We've been talking about it for several minutes. Can we talk about Patrick Bateman?
No, we cannot talk about Patrick Bateman. We can talk about Batman, and I would just say this.
But he's played by a Batman.
But guys, Batman was in the Lego movie, so that makes the Lego movie like the second best Batman movie
ever made.
You are right, actually. I correct myself. The Lego movie is the second best Batman movie.
Okay.
I have some pretty decent Lego controversial topic, not controversial at all, topics to bring up regarding
that surprises
Batman.
Me none, so go on.
It better not be anti-Lego movie.
No, do you know me?
Not very well.
He works at the Lego store.
Oh, shit.
It's like
I almost stopped by Legoland this weekend, by the way, on the way to San Diego.
Yeah, boy!
I've been to the one in Germany,
and we were considering going to it in Florida, but we didn't.
I heard it was pretty depressing, though, so...
What, Florida?
Anyway, just Legoland in general.
You have to be accompanied with a child.
You're not.
None of this has anything to do with Batman at this point.
No, but I have
Lego is tangentially related to Batman.
Times over the last several minutes.
No, there's actual Lego Batman news that's happening since it's Comic-Con this week, too. They're revealing actual sets. They revealed a few so far.
I didn't reveal the Tumblr one with the Dark Knight, Joker, and Batman.
That was revealed a few days ago. That was actually us employees a few months ago.
Oh, that's neat. That's the first Lego version of the Nolan films.
No, it's the second one. There was one in 2000. There was one 2 years ago that was the Bat and Bane Tumblr chase. It had Gordon, movie Bane, movie Batman, movie Tumblr, and the movie Bat.
Okay.
They had a movie Lego representation to check your privilege.
Sure.
Was that a joke somewhere that I just put right over my head?
Tumblr and the all right.
Anyhow, Justin bombing on this show isn't anything new.
Gascon.
Welcome to the Bombcast. Oh, wait, that's copyrighted.
That's
already a thing.
Damn it, Dan.
Wow.
I'm sorry, we can't use that as the name for our Kyle Chandler show.
You know what makes me mad? All of my joke disconnects don't pick up on the actual audio podcast. I wish there was a sound whenever I disconnected when a joke was so bad that I was forced to leave.
That happened. Feels like something Earl needs to edit it in post. Just add in the sound effect.
Anyhow, if we could actually go on topic at some point today.
Hey, you're the one running this ship, not us. This is your fault.
I've never ran this ship, let's be honest. I'm just clearly. Keep you folks in order when it happens.
Clearly, Justin, you're the one who's bombing all the jokes over here. What are you contributing?
Look, this ship is canon. It sails
the one derailing.
Okay, so, like I said, Batman debuted in 1939. He's had movies, which we've established. He has Echoes, which we've established. Let's kind of back up for a second. We've had a Batman podcast before, but none of us were actually on it, myself included. So I'm kind of curious, what was your first exposure to Batman or Batmanverse? And to make this easier, because there's way too many of you, we're going to go with Dan first.
I think my first exposure was either Returns or actually Batman Forever.
Those are two radically different first exposures to Batman.
Oh, I know. It was one of the two, because, I mean, I was young at that age. Batman Forever came out, what,
95? 95, and Batman Returns is 92.
Yeah, so, like, the whole, like, what's it called? The Schumacher / Burton tetralogy, I guess, whatever you want to call it.
With anthology.
Okay. Well, that whole, like, anthology then was, like, prolific, I think, around when most of us were young kids.
Yep.
All of us, really. True. So, you know, that was kind of my first exposure to it, as far as I can remember, on the big screen at least.
Okay. I'm surprised it wasn't the animated series, because that would have been pretty big back then as well.
I mean, I remember Batman Beyond being there, but not, like, super duper.
Okay. Justin.
I think mine is, like, Dan, it was more than likely Batman Forever, or it was some comic that I read involving Batman, a naked woman, and a ton of skulls. This was, like, 96.
I don't think that was a real comic.
I don't know. What's the 90s?
DeviantArt page.
That sounds like a comic that would happen in the 90s.
Yeah, that's all I remember about it. Just Batman, some cleavage, and a bunch of skulls. So, if I was like a kid now, I would call it like the entire New 52, but I can't. So.
No new 52 send on this show tonight.
Okay. Fine.
Only libel.
Fine.
Isn't libel written?
Yes. I'm going to write down over this podcast plenty of
the
Bible.
The only way I know the difference between that is the quote from Spider-Man that J. Jonah Jameson says.
Yeah. Whoa, hey, Batman cast only.
No, Spider-Man 2 is acceptable. I mean...
But that was Spider-Man 1.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Was it? I don't remember which movie it was in.
Either way, it was Spider-Man 1 or 2, so it's acceptable.
Anyhow, James, what was your first exposure?
I feel like it was one of those things where I can't remember specific. It was more of those general omnipresent cultural things. Like, I remember, I had some kind of Batman action figure as long as I can remember. Like, the first specific media I remember for certain seeing him in was the Justice League cartoon.
Wow, that is recent.
Yeah, well, I had known about him before. That was just the first piece of media I'd seen him in.
Okay.
Great cartoon.
Sam?
I'm pretty sure I saw Batman on television, like one of the animated series shows, but I didn't watch it regularly until... Actually, I didn't really watch it at all, intentionally, at least, until a couple years ago. But it was probably a TV show, but my first, like, solid Batman memory was the one with Robin in it that came out when I was younger, like
Batman,
the worst one
Batman
of all.
Robin?
Yeah. Like, specifically, the scene in my head is the circus scene that, like, Robin first shows up in, and then kissing Poison Ivy.
Different movies.
Hold on, time out. So your first experience with Batman is Batman Forever, the movie you don't remember Val Kilmer being in.
I didn't know who Val Kilmer was whenever I saw it. In all fairness, I haven't watched Batman Forever in, like, 15 years.
For good reason.
So, yeah, I was going to say, so there's a reason I don't remember Val Kilmer being in it.
It has one of the greatest songs of all time, though.
And then I remember Mr. Freeze.
Yes, so obviously.
I saw the one with Mr. Freeze too. Yeah. Whichever one that was.
That was also that was Batman and Robin.
Same movie? Yeah. Okay, then I'm talking.
No, they were
the
different
movie.
Movies.
No, they were different. No. Yeah, they might as well be the same movie, but they were different. Which we'll be checking out this Friday on for 151 proof movies. Actually, one of the reasons we created 151 proof movies was to watch that. As for me, I'm a bit older than all of you, so my first experience with Batman was actually reruns of the Adam West series.
Which I think I did see around the same time as Justice League, like those ended up getting syndicated.
Yeah,
you are old.
Yeah, I am old. I don't deny that. But, yeah, because, I mean, my first experience was, like, this is, like, how I remember the Penguin as the guy who has weaponized Ombras and wears, like, the blue suit and stuff like that. Though that wasn't from the Adam West. That was from, I believe, the Super Friends cartoon era where he donned the blue suit and stuff like that. But, yeah, that was my first exposure, which is also one of the reasons also kind of grown to... I don't necessarily care how Batman's portrayed. Like, there are people, and I don't know if any of you fall into this camp, where there are people who, they're Batman's kind of in the, we'll call it the Frank Miller style, where he's kind of dark and brooding and a loner.
Let's be honest, it's the Christopher Nolan style at this point.
But, well, no, it's, I mean, it's
he owns the style after those movies.
It was the Frank
Miller. It's for the people who want the gritty and seriousness, but also want the more supernatural elements.
Oh, gotcha.
Which I think Chris, I think Burton did the Frank Miller stuff where he's dark. I mean, extremely dark. Gotham's extremely dark. He wears an all black suit, and he kills people. Where Nolan kind of
did he kill people?
Yeah, he gleefully murders people in Batman Returns. It's insane. Wait, like he actually torches one of the Penguin's henchmen alive with his.
Did he actually do that?
Yeah, he torches one of the Penguin's henchmen with the Batmobile.
And the other one, he drops a bomb on, and he tosses him into the sewers.
Like, I remember that he may have, that he, like, led to Joker being killed at the end of Tim Burton Batman, but not him, like, directly killing someone.
Oh, but
I mean, he murders people in the Dark Knight Rises, too, to be fair.
But he doesn't really murder anybody in the Dark Knight Rises.
That's more
like
putting
there, are people, he, like, shoots explosive machine gun rounds into, there are people that probably die as a result of what he does.
No, it's more like the sentiment at the end of Batman Begins where he's like, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to, like, prevent you from dying.
Which is a really dumb, like, loophole.
Yeah.
It's
that moral high ground thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, he's
like,
straight.
High ground, Anakin.
Even in the first Batman film, he kills almost everybody in that factory. I don't think any of them got out alive after he bombed it.
He's a really shitty protector of the innocent.
Well, that's what I mean, is that that was the Frank Miller style, where Batman's this tough, gritty... I mean, even, you know, like,
but then he makes a huge big deal about having the moral high ground against the Joker in the second movie. It's like, now I'm not going to kill you because that's not me, but he sort of killed everybody else.
Even though he, like,
I mean, that's, like, kind of always him.
Yeah, even though he, like, dropped a dude from a building and broke his leg.
The Dark Knight very much felt like he was, like, Nolan was deliberately trying to avoid any of those moral workarounds like they had with that I don't have to save you kind of thing.
Well,
yeah, there were, most of the fight scenes, I mean, he has those, like, gauntlets on which have intense knives on them, but he never, like, kills anyone. They kind of just get knocked out, or, like, pretty badly wounded, probably.
Yeah, when I think of Batman, I think of the quote from Aladdin, like, it won't kill you, but you'd be surprised what you're going to live through. And that's pretty much what Batman is. He won't kill you. That doesn't mean he won't put you in the hospital for a while.
Just like,
yeah, basically.
That's what I always like about the Arkham games, is, like, he does all this stuff, and it's like, oh, yeah, I just broke your leg, you know?
I tossed that guy over a railing off a cliff, but he's probably fine.
He's unconscious. I punched this guy off the roof of a several-story building. He'll live.
He
will never walk again.
Like, I shattered his rib, headbutted his skull, but nope. He'll be fine.
Oh, he's good to go.
Don't all the henchmen in the Arkham games, like, kind of roll around on the floor after you get rid of them?
Yeah.
They make a note of that,
unless
too.
Unless you throw them over the balcony, in which case they don't address that.
If you do the, if you use the detective vision, it usually tells you, like, unconscious, and it shows them stabbing a pulse. It's kind of like, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, how Spider-Man games, he has a no-kill rule as well. So when you should throw people off of buildings, if you look over, you would see them hanging. Like, you don't necessarily know when he webs them up, but he does, because he can't kill.
But right, yeah, it's one of those things where all you have to do is basically have them go off screen, and it's like, you're done. It doesn't yeah. matter. It's irrelevant either way.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I think knowing Batman is more of a grounded one. He isn't as vicious and violent as the Frank Miller one, but he isn't goofy. Like, people always kind of complain that they are kind of downers. They don't have that ton of comedy, which I kind of disagree with. Like, they aren't, like, half a minute, like, Avengers or something, but they have humor. It's just not always there.
Begins has a few forced humor moments, like when he busts out the tumbler for the first time and Gordon's like, I need to get me one of those.
Okay, yeah. That's not humor. I find that cheesy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Totally the comic book cheesy humor that was, like, prevalent before, like, comic books started getting taken seriously.
Yeah, when I think of humor, I think more of the stuff with him and Alfred, like, oh, that's damn good television, or the stuff with him in the restaurant where he buys it and he acts, you know, when he acts drunk and stuff like that. That stuff I find humorous. There's nobody else left, and then the tumbler. That's just cheesy movie.
I'm not wearing hockey pads.
Yeah, so Begins. Yeah. I just recently watched Begins and The Dark Knight yesterday and the day before, and like Begins has a lot more of the cheesy comic humor than Dark Knight and Rises do, mm-hmm. which is kind of funny because Begins is from 2005, where comic book movies were still kind of that cheesiness.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's. I think Rises really acts on the humor. I think part of it is because they get rid of Alfred so early in the film.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
They also want to tell a specific and pretty straightforward and serious story, so it's like humor is not necessarily prevalent.
Yeah, but sometimes you can use the humor to undercut the tension, which is what they do sometimes. You want to break it up. You don't want it to be. You don't want people to be at 10 the entire movie. You want.
That's true. I mean, the Joker does do a pretty good job of breaking that up somewhat. The stuff that he says is not laugh out loud funny, but it's kind of like humorous in
it's like dark humor.
Yeah, it's really dark humor.
Yeah,
like the pencil thing.
The pencil thing's
like,
funny.
You shouldn't laugh at that, but deep down you know it's like really freaking funny.
Or like whenever he tells like you want to know how I get these scars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like it shouldn't be funny because he ends up killing these people, but you're like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah, but the people that kills are usually pretty bad. Like, the Joker was... The Joker kills a lot more bad guys than good guys in The Dark Knight, if you go back and watch it again and, like, keep score.
Yeah, he totally does.
I mean, part of it is because you can't... There's only so many good guys you can actually kill off. I mean, technically, he attempts to kill Gordon. He mangles Two-Face or Harvey Dent. He tries, and he does eventually kill Rachel.
To the thankfulness
he kills
of
the
an
judge,
entire nation.
And he kills the commissioner, or whatever it is.
Yeah, he kills the innocent dude.
To the gratefulness of the entire
nation. Wasn't the judge pretty corrupt in a way? Or?
I think all of them are pretty corrupt.
The judge wasn't
corrupt. No, he kills the judge and blows up her car, and then he kills the other dude by like poisoning his scotch. And those
okay,
two, like,
but he killed a bunch of thugs, and then burned some money, and then, like, killed all those bank robber guys at the beginning of the movie.
Totally. I'm not saying he didn't.
Actually,
like, I'm just highlighting the good people he did kill.
Okay, technically, killing the bank robbers doesn't count since he hired them.
True.
I guess? Why does that still not count?
I attempted to kill them. Does it count?
I mean, he got away with killing all of them.
I think he only kills one person.
No, he killed all of them.
He doesn't kill anybody. He kills the one person and he himself. No, he doesn't kill anybody at the intro sequence of Dark Knight. I remember watching that again. Yeah,
the bus killed one of them.
He kills the bus driver.
Yeah, he says he's going to kill the bus driver. It's never.
Yeah, but he didn't actually do it.
Yeah,
I thought he shot him up.
No, but didn't the bus driver didn't the bus like hit one of them too?
Yeah.
So there's the scene where the guy points the gun at him and says, you're probably supposed to kill me, right? And he's like, no, I'm supposed to kill the bus driver. The bus is supposed to kill you. And it's like, what? The bus kills him. He hops on the bus and is never seen again.
No. The guy comes out and he owes a lot of money, and then he shoots him dead.
Nope. I watched it just the other day.
Yeah, I watched it last night.
Oh, my God.
We spent way too long debating this one fact, but...
It's important.
The other type of Batman, and this is the Batman that most people don't like, is the kind of more campy and humorous Batman, which is what you got with the Adam West era, and what we kind of got a return to form with the Batman, the Brave and the Bold cartoon series that aired recently.
Great.
Quick question. Would you consider the Schumacher Batman to be included in this campy sort of thing?
Okay, here's my. This is what I've. This is my problem I've always had with the Schumacher films, and this is absolutely is that the Schumacher films accidentally get that tone, but they aren't going for it.
Right, like they still seem to be grounded in at least partially in some of the gothic elements of the Burton films, and especially in terms with a lot of their plotting still being slightly grim, but at the same time they're just indulging in a lot of the overtly silly tropes that just don't mesh with the rest of it.
Yeah, and that's their biggest fault is that they try to be serious, but so much of it comes off as a bad remake of an Adam West episode.
I think the best example of that is in a Batman Forever, where it's like Heath's car can like just drive on walls, and there's like this whole mesh of colors throughout the skyline as he just like drives through Gotham City.
Yeah, I was going to use that scene as an example. That's a really good scene that I like to display because it kind of portrays the Schumacher films as like almost vaudeville and almost like a stage production almost. Like all the sets kind of look really small and they look as though they're kind of put on Broadway almost.
My favorite, flashy, and
like campy, but in a different way.
My favorite one is in Batman and Robin when they crash through this thing and create a perfect bat symbol.
Oh, is that at the beginning?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I don't know what vehicle they use that does that or what.
Wait, are you talking about the surfboard scene or like when they're inside the museum?
No. When they break into the museum to stop Freeze, I think he drives the car and the car somehow forms a perfect back signal on the wall. Like it creates its emblem.
Oh yeah, and then like Robin does the same thing and he's just like shooting around.
Googled Batman, the Brave and the Bold. What? Can someone give me like an elevator pitch on this show? Because what?
Batman teams up with a different hero each week.
Okay.
The general theme is it's the campy Batman returned and done in a proper way. It's Batman who pulls out a lightsaber out of his belt. It's Batman who has a jetpack and does space adventures.
It's Batman who, like, switches places with Superman, who then, like, takes off his mask and reveals that he's Batman.
Wait, there's an entire musical episode?
Yeah, it has.
Why have I not watched this before?
Yeah, I've never heard of the show before.
If you had told me this, then I would have done it a long time ago. Oh, I mean, now I have to go get up to it.
Dude, it's amazing. I literally sing
this show's praise. It's my second favorite Batman animated series of all time, and it's one of my absolute favorite interpretations of the character. There's even an actual scene in the show where they kind of insult their dissenters, where Batmite goes,
I remember that. That was awesome.
I know I've seen like the ending of where Batmite's talking about how he got the show canceled because he was tired of it being too campy.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a scene in, I forget what episode it is, but it's basically Batmite talking to people at a fictional Comic-Con, and he's talking about
a
kind
of
character
like
Batman.
Batmite or something.
Yeah, and Batman.
Yeah, didn't you just post that on your Tumblr, Earl?
Yeah, I'm trying to see if I can find it to read the exact quote, but it's basically how I feel about Batman is that he's a character who's open to many interpretations, and I think they're all valid in their own unique ways. Like some people prefer. I mean, the golden rule, and it's one of the ones I kind of go back and forth with on the Burton films, is that he doesn't kill. That's what you need. That's what Batman is. He doesn't kill. Other than that,
that's every superhero.
No, every superhero.
Most superheroes,
or at least Will.
Most Marvel characters are okay with killing. Cap is okay with killing. Iron Man's okay with killing. Thor's okay with killing. Even DC characters.
Like Wonder Woman. It basically depends on what kind of character they have.
Spider-Man is
Wonder Woman is a warrior, so it makes sense.
Superman doesn't really kill people.
No, I've said this before.
I think in comics, the only three people who have a no kill rule are Spider-Man, Superman, and Batman. Everybody else
biggest comic book characters, to be fair.
Yeah, but everybody else, some people may not kill, but I don't think they have a stand and we won't kill. Like Green Lantern.
Like a hard no kill rule.
Yeah, like Green Lanterns didn't kill not because they didn't want to kill, but I believe their rings wouldn't let them use lethal force, and that was something that they changed during one of their storylines, which became a big deal.
See, I actually like the way they did the no kill rule in Arrow. Because he didn't start that way and then like ended up as a no kill type of character. I think
I don't want to harp on it too much. I actually think that's what they're doing with Superman and the Man of Steelverse.
Yeah.
Because I do think you need a reason. You know, you just can't say, oh, I don't kill people. Even Batman, his, in the Nolan trilogy, he doesn't kill because that's how his parents were killed. You know,
yeah, he has a legitimate reason.
That's a bit of a stretch because every superhero has his parents killed.
No, but he, I mean, but he said this is a speech from The Dark Knight Returns, where he's like, you know, we don't use guns because the guns are the enemies of our the weapons of our enemies or something like that. And he doesn't kill because it's so easy, which is another thing that he goes on to the speech on the end of Under the Red Hood, where like, it would be so easy for him to do that. And
I like Under the Red Hood. It's actually a really good animated movie.
I think it's the best animated Batman movie. Yeah,
it's really solid.
Everybody knows it's Master of Phantasm.
Yeah, I was gonna say Phantasm is the best movie.
I haven't seen Phantasm in a long time.
Of course. Okay. So I found it real quick. So this is the Batmite interaction from Batman: The Brave and the Bold. It's some random nerd in the crowd. I always felt Batman was best suited in the role of gritty urban crime detective, but now you guys have him up against Santas and Easter bunnies. I'm sorry, but that's not my Batman. Batmite retort is, Batman's rich history allows him to be interpreted in a multitude of ways. To be sure, this is a lighter incarnation, but it's certainly no less valid and true to the character's roots as the tortured Avenger crying out for mommy and daddy. But yes, if you have never seen Batman and Brave and the Bold, I highly recommend it. I think all three seasons are now on Netflix, and yes. I believe the musical episode is episode 27, Mayhem and the Music Meister. I have listened to that soundtrack way too often.
Isn't the soundtrack itself available on iTunes?
I believe so. And not only does it have an entire musical episode, I believe there's something like 8 or 9 songs that they actually sing throughout the course of the show. Joker has a song. Shastrick Man has a song. Vigilante has a song. Huh?
Doesn't Black Canary have a song?
She sings a song in the Mayhem and the Music Meister. But I'm talking about like, other episodes that have music.
Oh, okay.
I actually have sort of a theory as to why so many Batman fans reject the campier side. Like, it basically comes down
because
to...
Because of the Nolan movies?
Partially from the Frank Miller, but I think a lot of it has to do with they want to, like they want to enjoy this inherently silly thing, but they want to have it be validated and not, like, acknowledge that they're enjoying something silly. Mm-hmm. So when they put it under the skin of something more serious and grounded, it makes them feel more comfortable.
I think you're putting way too much thought into it, and that Batman became a lot more mainstream whenever the Nolan movies came around new generation of people.
I think that's wrong because growing up, with my people were kind of shocked with the first Batman movie because everybody grew up with the Adam West version of Batman. That was the Batman that our parents would have known. That was the type, and Batman was huge back then. That Adam West show did miraculous, huge numbers.
Yeah, that's what I said for the different generation.
Yeah, and I think our generation. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I don't think there's anyone you could say it became more popular with Nolan interpretation. I actually think his popularity started with the Burton era, and I think it continued with all his animated series. And I think Nolan just kind of latched onto that, and because I love the Nolan films, but I don't necessarily think they do anything that you wouldn't have found in other Batman mediums at the time.
Sure, but The Dark Knight is made. Like, Batman or no.
Oh, no, so The Dark Knight. It's a phenomenal film. I'm not going to take that away, but I'm saying that you could have found a similar version of Batman like that in the comics at the time.
Yes, but I was just saying, like, peak popularity of Batman, like, making one of the best movies ever made and putting Batman in it.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's how the grittiness gets defined. No, go on.
I think part of the reason that it works is that it doesn't focus specifically on simply the fun of Batman, even, like, the more serious, gritty fun that comes with, like, the Arkham games, is that it does sort of, at least partially, discard that kind of stuff to sort of to use the character to comment on, like, real-world political and social issues. And I think that's why it hit it big. But at the same time, I always have that slight worry that some people are just enjoying it because it makes Batman, because it sort of justifies their love of Batman in a way.
I think it does, again, which is why some people kind of rebelled against something like Batman, the Brave and the Bold, which is, you know, even more important when you think about the fact that it actually launched the same year The Dark Knight came out. And that was a complete, that would be like the complete polar opposite of what you just saw in a movie theater is. It's the first episode, Batman's in space fighting a bunch of tiny aliens, and he pulls out a lightsaber out of his bat belt, and he's teaming up with Blue Beetle. That, right from there, told you it was a different show. It's not even done in a realistic style. He's big and bulky and muscular. He looks like a superhero. And, yeah. And there are some people who reject the Adam West version. I can understand that it probably hasn't aged well for everybody. But again, it's a very valid interpretation of the character. And it's a very fun one if you kind of leave yourself open to that type of Batman.
Yeah, I know they're releasing like the whole of the 60s series pretty soon. Like later this year, they're releasing a box set of it.
Not that I'm counting down or anything. What were you saying,
okay,
Sam?
I was just saying, my introduction to the Adam West character of Batman was through Family Guy and Fairly Odd Parents. So it was actually really weird going back and watching the old 60s Batman with Adam West in it and trying to take... I know you're not supposed to take it seriously, but I didn't see the humor in it because I saw all the parodies first.
Well, I think that's the thing.
Is it really a parody, though, I guess? Because it's the exact same character, right?
I think it's just be more of like a reference than a parody.
Yeah,
because it's still his voice.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't necessarily think that the show was meant to be humorous. I think over time we've kind of taken it to be. It was intended to be campy, which isn't the same thing. Like, you can be campy and not be funny, which a lot of movies end up being. But I think we kind of take it with time. It's just a lot of that stuff is silly. Like, Bat Shark Repellent is the one people talk about. Or the Bat Bomb, like, you know. Just
some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Like, that is, you know, like, that wasn't supposed to be funny. I mean, I guess it was. It was a one-liner. But it was more campy, and over time it's just become something we've associated with that show being humorous. Maybe for the wrong reasons, but it has aged in that way where if you put a scene like that in, like, Batman Forever, it wouldn't have worked because it's so tonally different than everything else around it. So, yeah, I mean, we've kind of said this before. Batman has a huge storied history in movies. If I'm not mistaken, he's the superhero with the most live-action movies to date, with 8.
Both retailers or publishers?
I don't think it matters. I don't think, well, unless you count, like, Samuel L. Jackson's character appearing in all the Marvel movies.
Still, that's only be like what Iron Man 2, Captain America, and Captain America 2. So it'd only be like 5 movies.
Yeah, Avengers.
I mean, I think I would imagine what's the call would be up there. Hugh Jackman, I think, is up to 7 or 8.
Oh, that's
now.
A good point.
Yeah, X-Men, X-2, X-3, First Class, Days of Future Past, both Wolverine movies.
But
yeah,
he's getting
close. Wait, are we counting the old 40s serial Batman in here?
Technically you would, because they were movies, but... I mean, they were serials, they were shown in front of movies. But
so,
I'm just thinking of as being the center, like, even though Wolverine is the center of most of the X-Men films, they are X-Men movies without him.
was Batman and Superman, were those the only superhero movies made before Spider-Man? Like, were those
no.
the only two live-action movies tried?
No, there's one for
Supergirl.
Flash, there's one for Nick Fury.
Spawn.
Marvel did
live action movies?
Yeah. There's a Captain America movie. There's a
Spawn movie?
Yeah. I think there were 3 Captain America movies. Like, I think there were 2 in the 70s and then 1 in the 90s.
Huh.
Oh,
but Batman and Superman were the only ones that caught on, I guess.
Captain America? No, actually, the one that caught on before Spider-Man would have been X-Men and Blade.
The beginning of the modern one was basically the 3-way punch of Blade, X-Men, and then Spider-Man.
I completely forgot that Blade was a comic.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forget that, but that really was... That Blade more than X-Men and Spider-Man was the one that kick-started this whole movement that we have now. But people tend to ignore it in the history.
People usually credit Spider-Man with, like...
Yeah.
The popular, right?
That's not really true, though.
It's the first one that made it the biggest, I think.
It was the big main... Because, I mean, X-Men came out beforehand, and X-Men paved the way, but Spider-Man was the one that kind of broke out and became this big blockbuster hit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's been
how
a couple
Superman
of
movies have there been?
War Originals, Returns, Man of Steel, the Supergirl count?
No.
Oh.
6.
Okay. I actually want to count, like, some of the old serials, like, I think there's Superman versus the Mole Man or something like that.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, I mean, as far as for, there's 6 Supermans, there's 8 Batman, there is, I don't think any, there are like five Incredible Hulk films? Four or five?
Are there really five?
There's like the Death of the Incredible Hulk, the Return of the Incredible Hulk.
Are those like Lou Ferrigno ones?
Yeah.
Is it the Rise of the Dawn of the Planet of the Hulk?
I wish they would make a Planet of the Hulk movie. So,
that is
yeah.
the rumor.
Hulk is up there, Superman's up there, Batman's up there, Spider-Man's up there now, five I believe he's up to.
Yes,
five. I guess five-ish. I think he had TV movies as well.
Spider-Man?
Yeah. Have you ever seen a 70... Well, that's a subject for another day.
Yeah, I was
the Spider-Man live-action TV show is something to be
behold. What's the Japanese one? Japan?
There was an American one, too.
Oh, there was? I just know about the Japanese one.
Both of them. I didn't know about either later on.
I was actually going to say, it's actually kind of curious. As much as he's been successful in movies, Batman hasn't had a TV show since the 60s, as far as live-action goes. And I guess because he's always had...
Would you count Birds of Prey?
No, it's not a Batman show. And I wouldn't count Gotham either.
I was about to say that one. All right.
Like, it seems to just be Batman, the Muppet Babies equivalent to Batman, so...
Well,
basically, he sees that they will do anything around Batman except for Batman, because Birds of Prey literally has him and Catwoman building on their daughter in the first episode. And Gotham is about a young Bruce Wayne, but he won't become Batman in Sirius, they said. Which makes sense, because he's like 10.
Where's the trigger?
Swear to me! But I guess his voice would have to crack while he's saying that or something.
Swear to me.
I bet you they drop a joke like that in there somewhere.
Yeah,
totally. Self-restraint to not drop a I'm going to become Batman someday joke in that series.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. But, it'll probably be like the first episode.
But I guess, on the other hand, the guy has had, I believe it's something like 7 or 8 animated series. Yeah.
Well,
so,
there have been a bunch.
I think part of the reason they keep going back to that is because it's a lot easier to do, you know, like hand-to-hand combat or the crazy stuff with the Batmobile. In animation, than it probably is to like build a set and like.
Well, I kind of agree and disagree, but I do think
because
I mean
Arrow and Smallville sort of proved that you can do superhero
right,
stories
right.
in live action.
Like,
yeah,
like,
especially
before,
Arrow,
before,
which is basically a toned down million.
Arrow is Batman,
right?
It's,
yeah,
it's
I mean,
the
like,
same character,
right? I mean, like pre-Arrow, that's probably like their reasoning behind it.
Well, yeah, there's also been projects, but a lot of the times, because they're originally before Smallville, they were going to do an actual Gotham City, which would have been Batman. Like that. I mean, I guess that's what we're getting with Gotham, actually.
Yeah.
But,
no, because I think what you're talking about is they had a guy on Smallville who was like supposed to be Batman.
No. Even before Smallville, they were going to do Batman, and they decided to go with a Superman origin show. Because for some strange reason, they always find it easier to do. Superman has had, I think, 5 live-action TV shows or something like that. So it's insane.
That is the lamest superhero ever.
We won't get into that, but... but yeah, Batman... I mean, Batman has had... I believe Batman has had 5 animated series in the last 22 years. He's been on TV, I believe, every year since 1992. So, I guess we might as well talk about this too, the Batman video games. I'm sure most people here have exposed themselves to the Arkham franchise.
Yep, 100% of Arkham Asylum and Arkham City twice.
And Arkham Origins?
Yeah.
I haven't actually played Origins yet.
Talking to him.
Heard okay things, just haven't gotten around to it.
It is not bad, but it's not great. It's like,
I prefer it over City.
Really?
Yeah, I find City...
I
think because it has a cleaner shot than City, because City's shot is like, we're going to do this.
City's a bit too overstepped.
Hold up, back up. You really think that Origins has a cleaner plot than City?
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward story. It has twists and turns, but it's pretty straightforward. You can see how A needs to B.
Better focus, maybe, but I wouldn't overly say better story, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I guess what you're saying is, like, more coherent and grounded.
Yeah, more coherent. Yeah, I think my biggest problem with Origin's story is, like, the assassin thing, like, kind of gets, like, dropped off and disposed of fairly quickly.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree with you. I think the concept they were selling us on was much more interesting than the concept we got. But
right.
Arkham City was sort of two different concepts that don't come together until the end, and then you don't have any part in those two coming together.
Right. I feel like all three games currently suffer from like using the Joker as their primary villain, and
Arkham Asylum does kinda, like, everything else does.
Still, I feel like the games like kind of stretch their credibility when most of it is caused or directly affected by Joker doing something.
Well, again, I disagree with Arkham Asylum because it makes sense to have a central threat, especially something that's going to keep him in the asylum all night. And everything else, it becomes extraneous, especially with Arkham Origins, I think.
It's like, oh yeah, Snowstorm has got everyone staying inside.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of what I call BS on with Arkham Knight. Like, for some reason, I just don't buy that everyone would just, like, up and abandon Gotham City so fast.
Honestly speaking, I'm surprised more people haven't abandoned Gotham City.
Okay, yeah. First off, it's a miracle that anyone even still lives in that fucking place, because honestly, it's a hellhole.
Like, I have to imagine you would only live there if you are too poor to get out. Like, other than that, I can't imagine anyone wanting to stay there.
Apparently people are too poor to get out.
I mean, that has to be the case. I mean, you've seen some of the economic state some people in Gotham are in.
Yeah, I kind of imagine Gotham to be like Detroit, where it's just like, it's a really shitty place that no one can get out of unless either you die or someone just like smuggles you out somehow.
Yeah.
Apologies to anyone from Detroit, but
like the top three things you should do when you're in Detroit will be get mugged, lose your job to the automotive industry, and get out of Detroit.
Yeah. But aside from that, a lot of people love the Arkham games, but there are other actual good Batman games. And,
Lego Batman 2 is pretty good.
Lego Batman. One that I think doesn't get enough credit, and I think partially because it came out in the shadow of the Arkham games, was Batman the Brave and the Bold on the Wii. It's a 2D beat-em-up by WayForward. Really good looking game, really fun. There was also a DS version where I believe they connected. You could use the DS to control Batmite, who was kind of like an assist character, which was something apparently that was big on the Wii generation for some strange reason. Mario Galaxy did something like that as well. Back in the days, to make me sound old, the NES Batman games, Batman and the Return of the Joker, were pretty solid beat-em-ups. The Genesis and Super Nintendo both had a Batman Returns game, which really pretty solid beat-em-ups as well. Gotham City, that's an okay game. It's free to play on PC, so it's at least worth checking out.
It's a fun game. It's a weird concept, but I think it works solidly as a shooter and does enough to like differentiate itself from other shooters.
Yeah, I hated the idea, but I think the concept in itself isn't so bad, especially being that if you've seen something like Batman Begins, you know, like, the Jokers exist, and, you know, it makes sense that people want to be copycats. Though, I mean, honestly, if the Joker found that, he'd probably go and kill them all anyhow.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what he did in Return of the Joker.
Yeah. There was, I would avoid Batman Forever on the Super Nintendo. That was back in the days when everybody kind of got obsessed with the technology from Mortal Kombat and did the, they photograph actual people and use them in the game.
Mortal Kombat?
Yeah.
Like the photorealistic fighters?
Yeah, that was just really weird. That game, you have to use select and up to use your belt. You needed your belt all the time to get to higher levels and stuff like that. It was really strange. There are some bad Batman games, but there are on the GameCube, PlayStation 2, and Xbox, there was,
Was it Dark Tomorrow?
Dark Victory. Hold on. Dark Victory is the sequel to The Long Halloween. Tomorrow is the GameCube game. And Rise of Shang Tsung and Batman Vengeance were actually both pretty solid co-op beat-em-ups. Me and my friends had a ton of fun with that.
Okay. Oh, wait, we forgot another bad Batman game.
Well, I'm sure if we were going to name them all, we'd be here forever, but what was
Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe.
Never forget.
That was
bad. Never forget.
What's wrong with that?
Destabilizing the boom tube.
Boom tube.
Well, I mean, if you're expecting great Cosmo fighting game, I didn't have any beef with it.
Perhaps the idea of heroic brutalities isn't the best choice.
Well, if they don't
kill. And
then
Injustice happens.
Yeah,
decent things about.
Injustice is really good, even though it's that whole dark Superman is a dick storyline that they roll out way too often. It becomes a trope at this point.
It's basically the people don't want to be seen enjoying a character as lawful good and perfectly moral as Superman. So you have to switch him to dark to make some people care.
Yeah. Well, 2000 pretty bad year for Superman fans.
Well, I mean, it had the Phenomenal Man of Steel, so there was that.
You know,
Phenomenal Man of Steel. The divisive Man of Steel. So it depends.
Which everyone
it was either awesome
like
or terrible for you, depending on.
Yep. It's the movie that everyone loved up until the last 5 minutes.
Yes.
I have no problem with the last five
minutes. Okay, correction. Half the people, like, everyone loved up until they saw it, at which point half the people loved it.
Well, no, I think we won't get into this discussion because it's not Batman-related, but
so Batman has a bunch of sidekicks and other, the extended Bat family of helpers.
Yes, he is an extremely
terrible
loner.
Specifically within Gotham for now.
Nobody's in Gotham anymore.
The loners are always, like, the way I heard Robin describe was basically he's the way to ground Batman in some sense of humanity, to not just make him the empty loner that all the brooding teenagers want him to be.
Which, you know, is like why one died, one got crippled, the other one got smacked, the other one is presumed dead, and the other one's a douchebag.
Well, most of them... Wait, which one's the douchebag? How do people hate Tim Drake? Tim Drake is the best Robin.
No, new Tim Drake.
Well, new Tim Drake doesn't count.
Yeah, that's what
I don't count that Teen Titan stuff. Whatever
that... That's what I'm saying. He's a douchebag.
And that
Teen Titans is awesome, and I will not hear crap about that show.
New 52 Teen Titans.
Read the comic.
Oh, okay.
Where they get Tron ripoffs. Yes, Batman has an extremely extensive extended family. He's had 35 Robins, 3 Batgirls. He had Azul, he has Batwing, he has Batman Inc., which is basically Batman's from around the world.
It's
basically
an
international alternate universe Batman.
Didn't Joker kill most of them?
I think most of them ended up dead, but there are still some that operate.
Was basically how they sent off when Grant Morrison was leaving.
Grant Morrison was the one who killed them off.
Yep.
Yeah, hold on. I'm just going to make sure I know all the five canon universe Batmans, or canon Robins. Let's see. Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, Tim Drake, Stephanie Brown, and then Damian Wayne.
Yes.
And then the Batgirls are Barbara Gordon, Stephanie Brown, and Cassandra Cain.
And, I mean, I guess technically they would be spoiler, even though that's Stephanie Brown, who apparently gets around in the Batman ident. Well, actually, we said this at the start of the show. Actually, I think we said this. Yeah, we said this at the start of the show when everybody was picking their Robin. Is that the Robin and Batgirl, to a degree, are interesting characters because, unlike Batman, they get to evolve. Dick Grayson went from Robin to Nightwing. Jason went from Robin to Dead to back alive to Red Hood. Tim went from Robin to Red Robin, which always makes me think of the restaurant.
To douchebag.
And Damien's dead. Stephanie went from Spoiler to... Stephanie went from what? I think she went Spoiler, Batgirl, Robin, Spoiler...
Wait, was it Spoiler, Batgirl, then Robin, or was it Spoiler, Robin, then Batgirl?
Yeah, I can't remember if she became... Robin, if you became Robin after being Batgirl. Stephanie Brown's a very interesting character. And the fact that, especially being the way that Batman tends to pick Robins, is that she's tried her hardest to prove herself to Batman, and he just wouldn't have it. So she tried so hard, she ended up getting herself killed.
Rip in pieces, Stephanie Brown. You died as you lived, as a Robin.
The internet was outraged, so she came back to life and got to be Batgirl. Apparently was in that Young Justice show everyone always tells me is good.
It is good, and she was in it for 2 minutes.
So basically the length of the show.
No.
That wasn't how long it lasted.
Hey, it has 2 seasons.
So I'm going to kick you in the head.
I know. I remember when I watched it, the reason it got canceled. It was one of the most beautiful car drive, what-the-fuck moments of pure anger.
What did you tell him?
I told him, the official reason it got canceled.
Right, what was the official reason that you told him?
Well, the official reason was because, the female, it had too much of its audience was female, and someone at the Warner Brothers executive did some study that found out the women didn't buy enough action figures. And they need to show selection.
Yeah.
So it was literally canceled for actually getting sizable female fans.
Well, I mean, that's part of it. It's partly because it didn't happen. I mean, most of it was people weren't buying toys.
They only did one thing at toys, though.
Yeah, it was a crapshoot, especially Green Lantern got bundled with the fact that nobody wanted to buy Green Lantern. Like, no stores wanted to buy Green Lantern figures because they got stuck with so many of them after the movie, and they didn't want to get burnt again. And Young Justice had the worst airing schedule ever.
Are you sure? A lot of Cartoon Network shows had awful airing schedules.
Okay, fair enough.
It was Fridays, and then Saturdays, and then hiatus, and hiatus, and Saturdays, and Fridays, and hiatus, and hiatus.
So it was basically significant level of inconsistency. So it was inevitably canceled.
As a fan of Legend of Korra, I've been through the stands about 3 times now.
Well, Legend of Korra has had a pretty decent, consistent airing schedule when it's airing, even if it's a messed up one.
You say that, but then they aired of the final 4 episodes of season 2 online before on TV, which was what even?
It was basically we know this show's not doing well, but we've already made so much of it that we can't back off now, so here you go.
Okay, for comparison's sake, what they did with Young Justice was one Saturday they decided to take it off when they were going to air a new episode, not tell anybody, not even the creators, what was happening for 5 months, and cancel the show and just burn off the rest of the episodes. Corey, you got to see the episodes.
I can't be wrong, but I think it was made by Greg Weisman, who worked on Spectacular Spider-Man, which was cut short because Disney wanted to have an in-house run show rather than one that was, licensed out from another studio. Yeah, they didn't want a good one.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Weisman has had a terrible track record of keeping his shows around.
Oh,
upside,
never forget Gargoyles.
On the upside, he's doing Star Wars, so, maybe that'll...
Wait, what?
Wait, is he doing Rebels?
Yeah, he's doing Rebels.
Wait, what?
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's doing Rebels with Dave Funny.
Oh, my God, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, crap. So you think it's going to get canceled after 2 seasons?
Dick, James, why are you being such a dick, dude?
I'm not being a dick. I'm being a pessimist.
Well, considering that the last Star Wars lasted 5 seasons, I think this one should be good.
And then they abruptly canceled it.
I'm being optimistic.
Well, man, if I had known... Alright, now I'm excited for the new Star Wars show. Anyway, Batman villains.
Did you not know
Batman villains?
No! So Batman's also got a bunch of villains.
He has the best villains in the business. I don't know if that's
a good thing.
Probably has the best rogues gallery. I think it's reasonable. Or at least the most varied. He has a pretty sizable variety of characters, so they have... a good amount of strengths they can draw on for different
stories.
He
has a good variety of villains that have very good driving forces to them. Mr. Freeze is, I think, the perfect example of that.
I'm assuming we're talking, animated canon Mr. Freeze.
I was about to say, I have Mr. Freeze for that reason, and one of the reasons I've been... Because before that show, Mr. Freeze was literally just a code-based villain. He didn't have any real hook or intrigue to him. And
he was still more interesting than Captain Cold, basically.
Yeah, and they're this is kind of lame. So they give him this huge backstory about, his wife and trying to preserve her and stuff like that. And it worked because the show always knew... I believe Mr. Freeze showed up 4 times throughout the entire run of the show, which was 100 episodes. And this includes one movie. So, they knew when to sprinkle his appearances in, and it was always kind of evolving his arc, instead of we'll just use Mr. Freeze because we need a code episode, and Batman to make ice puns. I'm sorry, Batman and Robin, it makes me bitter sometimes.
For good reason.
Yeah, but it's a lot of these, a lot of the, none of his characters has these interesting kind of origins, and it kind of goes to show you that you never know what's going to become a hit. Like the Joker, for example, was killed off in his first appearance. He was supposed to be a one-time foe, and people resonated with him so much that they brought him back, and as you know, the Joker has been thrown on his side ever since. I think Joker is also the most successful supervillain in comic books, having killed several people and murdered a Robin and crippled the Batgirl.
That'll do it.
He has Two-Face, which is another interesting one. I think what makes a lot of Batman foes interesting, especially for somebody like me, is that so many of them are driven by psychological trauma. Where it's not like, oh, I'm evil because I was in a lab experiment, or I'm evil because I was, you know, I'm an alien who's just evil because I'm evil. It's like they all have some type of psychological scarring that drives them crazy. I think the best villains are always a reflection of the hero. So if Batman is somebody who has a I think we can all agree that Batman has something wrong with him. Even if he won't, you know, even if it's not what most would think as wrong.
He's got multiple somethings wrong with him, let's be real.
Yeah. And his feelings are just that. It's like, I think Two-Face is the perfect example. Two-Face takes Batman's ideals and perverts them. If Batman's, you know, Batman's all about justice, Two-Face is all about chaos on the other end of the extreme. And why it's intriguing is because Harvey Dent, his other personality, was a fighter for justice and right. And one of my favorite things, and just to plug this before we get through the episode, I did do a list of the 75 best Batman animated episodes of all time on the website, so check that out. And one of the episodes I named was Judgment Day, which is Two-Face creates a third persona. If Harvey Dent is the personification of his, you know, judicial proceedings, and Two-Face is kind of the criminal side, the judge is the executioner side, and he does, you know, he doesn't do trial by jury, he just wants to kill. And it's interesting because, you know, like, there is no reason that Two-Face has to stop at two personalities just because he has a literal spit face, and that was an intriguing aspect to his character. I don't know how many of you read comics, but the Riddler just kind of got out of being the focus of Batman Zero Year.
They finally finished Zero Year?
Yeah, I know. An origin story that took 15 months.
It was getting ready to come on after they finished something on Earth, and I heard that he's going on a 12-year origin. No. We know. You don't need to do that.
I will say this.
After this game,
what happened?
After this arc, I think it's Endgame.
Yeah, weird.
I think that's the one that they're revealing at Comic-Con this week.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I think the next arc actually takes place after Batman Eternal, which is still ongoing. So it's like you're going to figure out the status quo of Gotham before this weekly series ends in, like, April. Whatever.
Yeah, that sounds like a Batman thing.
Yeah. But yeah, Zero Year was, I mean, I enjoyed Zero Year, but yeah, Riddler was a big part of that. You know, we've mentioned the Joker. Catwoman's an intriguing, I actually think Catwoman's the most intriguing female character in comics to me, and that she has a sense of morality, but it's really just her sense. It's like what's best for her. So she walks that line between bad guy and good guy so readily that it's always intriguing, because she never goes full evil. She's not going to hold Gotham ransom or set off a bomb, but at the same time, she isn't going to be the one who rushes in to rescue people.
She's out for herself.
Yeah, Poison Ivy, another strong female villain. Harley Quinn's a very interesting character.
Yeah, star of my favorite episode of Batman the Animated Series, Matt Love. That's on your list, right?
Yes.
Is that the one where Batman takes her out to the mall?
That's the one that, like, explains her backstory.
Okay.
Yeah. The one you're talking about is, what is it? A Day Out or something like that?
It might be. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, it's Harley Quinn was such a fascinating character to see evolve. I guess you had to see her evolve because she didn't exist beforehand. But seeing how she went from not exist and to become one of the most popular characters in the cartoon, to literally become one of the most popular comic book characters. She has like this third or fourth best-selling comic the last few months. It's truly impressive. And you know, she pretty much co-stars in the games. It's like Batman, Joker, Harley Quinn. So yeah, there's that. You know, there's a ton of great ones. There's some obscure ones. Gentleman Ghost from Batman the Brave and the Bold. Solomon Grundy.
Solomon Grundy.
Solomon Grundy wants pants too.
The Croc King. Man Bat.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What do you think is like the best interpretation of a villain's origin?
Heart of Ice.
Not the best, but your favorite.
Heart of Ice.
Okay.
I don't think anybody would disagree with Heart of Ice.
I wouldn't disagree, but my personal favorite is Mad Love.
Mad Love?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I just think of it as a straight origin where Mad Joe's like a Mad Joe's a fantastic episode as well.
It's like an origin.
I also think that the comic does a bit more to flesh it out. What about you, Justin?
I would do Heart of Ice, or I really like the small origin bit that they did for Joker in Arkham Origins. I think it's more like the way that Troy Baker delivers the lines more than the actual like thing that happens itself. But it feels like a nice. It feels like a nice moment that sort of shows how the two reflect off of each other. And if the game had more, that I would have liked the story more than I did.
My favorite Joker origin is the Killing Joke, because it has my absolute favorite line about the Joker and his past. It's like
multiple choice one.
Yeah. If I'm going to have a pass, I prefer it be multiple choice. And that's kind of what they did in The Dark Knight as well. Where the Joker, I mean, the thing that's always made the Joker so dangerous is that nobody knows who he is or what he is. And I think I've always appreciated them never giving him a concrete origin. It's just one of the reasons I'm not huge on the original Batman film. It's not in my top three Batman films. Mm-hmm. It's I like the joke, like, you know, like he just exists in Batman the animated series. There's no origins for him. He's just there from day one. They don't go. I think, you know, they do kind of give him, like, he was a criminal. They gave him part of an origin in Mask of the Phantasm and stuff like that. And they hint at stuff, but they never outright say, like, okay, A happened, B happened, so the Joker happened. Same thing with Catwoman's another one who doesn't really have much of an origin.
Yeah, it's flexible depending on the continuity. I think Batman Year One is the only one where she's a former prostitute, but I could be wrong. There might be a couple others to use.
That's the only one, because Frank Miller hates women.
Yeah, this is actually true.
I mean, who doesn't, am I right?
I mean, because really, the thing that Frank Miller does is, like, I have a female, I have the right, make her a prostitute. I mean, Elektra's a prostitute, Catwoman's a prostitute. I'm surprised he didn't make Carrie a prostitute. Maybe she was too young for him.
Do you honestly think that would stop him now?
See, in Frank Miller's eyes, every woman either is a prostitute or is essentially a...
Because he wrote The Killing Joke, right?
No, he wrote The Dark Knight Returns, Year One.
Who wrote The Killing Joke?
Adam Moore.
Okay.
Or Alan Moore.
Okay, no, because I remember hearing something where it's like Alan Moore talked about crippling Oracle, and I think the editor said, yeah, just go ahead and cripple the bitch.
Whoa.
Yeah, that sounds like something. You know, editors are weird people, but
Yeah.
I have a feeling Alan Moore has a bit more respect towards women.
Yeah, I guess that would be, I don't know if this is an easy question, but what is your favorite Batman story in any medium?
Oh, in any medium. That would be a tough one.
The Lego Movie.
Damn it.
See, he's, okay, Lego Movie's not my favorite Batman story, but I think it might be my favorite depiction of Batman.
Yeah, it is a funny one.
It does present the attempt to make Batman soup like very dark and serious as sort of inherently silly on a certain level.
It feels
it portrays him as like a really conceited version of Batman.
Yeah, it's basically a moody teenager trying to feel dark, brooding, important. Yeah.
It's basically what, like, Batman's biggest teenage fan would be if he was Batman. He's so full of himself, and he thinks that he's so cool that he's so dark.
And then he has one of the greatest songs ever. Like, I know most people want Everything Is Awesome to get Oscar nomination, but that's the song I want, Untitled Self-Portrait. Is that, Kevin, that be the song we go out on?
I think so. Yeah, we can do that.
Sure.
We should like open with the Dark Knight theme from the end of the movie, and then it's like dun dun dun, and then do like dun, 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 dun,
dun. Anyhow, other than Dan's Ego movie, what else do we got?
That wasn't actually my serious answer. I just wanted to throw it out there.
Kind of
okay,
makes it better.
And what was your serious answer?
I was still thinking about it, actually.
Okay, I'll go first since I have always been a huge fan of the Long Halloween. I mean, to me, and this is something I think a lot of interpretations of Batman, well, I guess more the movies get wrong or don't have the chance to do, is his detective aspect. I've said this before, they don't do many genre pieces for comic books, so it would make sense that you don't get like a film noir, you don't get a murder mystery, but that's essentially what the Long Halloween is. And, yeah, you know, some people do complain about the fact that it is kind of cheating because, I realistically, you can't really figure out who the murderer is based on the cues you get.
I feel like that's sort of part of half, like, some kind of murder mysteries are the kind that you can figure it out, and some of them are trying to explore some other thing. I mean, one of my favorite recent crime movies is Zodiac, and part of the point is that there is no way to find him, and it's just sort of exploring Jake Gyllenhaal's obsession with the hunt.
Fair enough. But yeah, it's my favorite. It's one of the few Batman comics I've read more than once. I probably don't want to think about how many times I've read it. And I'm also a sucker because I am a kid at heart for any giant team-ups. And this one has like a bunch of villains just kind of popping in and out for one or two issues. But it's always cool. I mean, just as a spoiler, one of my absolute favorite episodes of any Batman series is Almost Got Him, which is the episode with all of the villains on the card table just sharing stories. I love the fact that the villains exist outside of Batman. Like, they know each other, they hang out, they piss off each other.
It was a really cool episode.
Yeah, one of the things they do in Batman the Animated Series, and they bring back in that episode, is the fact that Two-Face and Poison Ivy date when they're Pamela Icy and Harvey Dent, and they still hate each other because she did try to poison and kill him. So it's not like they're bad guys now, so they're best friends. So that was a nice little touch.
That actually would be, like, a really interesting thing to explore. Like after, you know, Jason died, it'd be interesting if, like, the villains, like, for whatever reason, like, they're evil, but they're not, like, super cruel, so they decide to, like, take it easy on the new Robin.
Well, that's kind of what that's kind of what happens to Flash and his rogues gallery, especially with like Wally and eventually Bart, where they're kind of successors and they don't go as hard. There are some stories I would recommend with the Flash, but I think it's a hard one to do. It's also not what we're talking about right now. Does anybody else have their answer ready?
I think I would go with I think it's Night of the Owls is the first one from Scott Snyder.
Is it Night of Court of the Owls?
Is it Court? Okay, Court. I really like that one in the unfolding mystery and the way that everything is sort of presented.
Okay.
He is a very good writer, and it feels like he really like just like knocked it out of the park with his first story arc.
Okay, I'm gonna have to change my pick of it. Now, because I actually just finished Zero Year, and that actually works. My biggest beef with Scott Snyder for the longest time was the fact that he has great ideas and he writes great stories. He doesn't know how to end them. So out of them, it's just like, Batman's awesome.
Are you talking about a death of the family specifically?
No, I'm talking death of the family and Night of the Court of the Owls, because Court of the Owls is basically Batman just realizing that he's not insane and beating the crap out of them. But yeah, he actually ends Zero Year well, so I'll give him credit for that.
Alright.
Okay, Stan, James.
Sticking purely to comics,
TV show, movies, whatever, games.
Yeah, this was like the any sort of medium.
This is anything.
Let's see. I'm gonna actually split my answer, so I am gonna pick a comic story. Year One, I think, is a really terrific, like, super concise origin and initial years of Batman. That I think definitely it sort of emphasizes some of the stuff that then went into Batman Begins. I'm not just showing that how did Batman get all these, like, get his, like, training and abilities and people and stuff, but more, like, more exploring specifically what motivates the kind of person who would be someone like this. And then just really gorgeous art that emphasizes the gothic look, a lot of really great uses of shadows. I mean, just a really great, concise stuff that also has, that's also a terrific Commissioner Gordon story on top of it.
I was going to say, it's more of a Commissioner and then for my, like, story with Batman in it.
On a certain level, yeah. On a partial level, yeah, it is basically how Gotham is reacting to the introduction of this new kind of, this new idea.
Okay, and what's the second one?
On the outside of comics, I mean, as much as I think it has been overexposed, I do think The Dark Knight really is a terrific film. I mean, it basically is Christopher Nolan using Batman to explore real-world socio-political ideas of what happens when you place a post-9/11 society against someone like an icon of absolute anarchy, and then using it to sort of explore, you know, what is the purpose of this kind of hero? It avoids a lot of the trappings of just posturing heroism and, you know, actually incorporating real sacrifice into it. I mean, it's just terrific.
Okay. Dan?
I'm not a huge comic book reader of DC specifically, so Batman comics I'm not especially well-versed on. That having been said, I really do like Death in the Family, actually. That's one of the few Batman stories that I've actually read. So I guess of my limited exposure to the comics, that one would probably be my favorite. It explores not so much Batman, I guess, as much as, like, the dynamic between Batman's whole, like, team, if you want to call it that.
Bat family.
Yeah, really the Bat family. I mean, that's the best way to put it, I guess. So,
well, I mean, I think that this is Bat family and Superman family. The Super family.
Yeah. So I like how it explores that. I don't know if that's my favorite Batman incarnation. I'm going to jump on James's sort of bandwagon and say The Dark Knight is really, like, a pretty solid series. I was thinking of it while I was watching the first two movies the past few nights. What I really like is how it explores, like James said, a lot of ideas about, like, different things in society nowadays that, like, what if a superhero was around for it? Like, one of the things it explores in The Dark Knight is when Lao is in Hong Kong and he just goes to Hong Kong and basically just kidnaps him and brings him here. And there's, like, no repercussion because he kind of exists outside the law because nobody actually knows who he is and can find him. It's just little kind of stuff like that, and other sort of, like, threats against, not society necessarily, but, like, an entire city of Gotham, stuff like that, that really get explored. And it's very well grounded in realistic villains and fairly realistic lore, with the exception of that, like, machine from Batman Begins, whatever.
Yeah, I actually just remember the way one person described it was, it's basically a battle between Batman and Joker for Gotham's soul.
Yeah, which, I mean, they kind of hit on the nose at the end, but...
You and me, and
yeah, it does a good job of basically taking the strengths of Batman in a realistic way. Like, it doesn't... What I don't like about the other Batman anthology is it takes a lot of, like, the more insane villains and stuff like that, the more unbelievable ones. Batman, the Nolan trilogy, does a good job of taking the ones that could feasibly exist in society nowadays in a live-action situation.
Well, I think... I mean, I would... kind of disagree, only in the sense that the most part, the villains from the first three Batman films have done a million films again. You have Joker, you have Catwoman, you have Two-Face, and you even have Bane from the fourth one. So, you know, they take some of the villains. I think they do take a more grounded approach to them instead of the comic booky stuff, because that does make some of them inherently silly. I was going to say the other thing that I love about the Nolan trilogy, which I think a lot of times does get mixed up in all of the Batman albums, is that it also examines the character of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that is forgotten, because that's one of my beefs with like the Burton films. It's like Bruce Wayne isn't a character. He just kind of sits around staring at stuff. Sometimes quite literally.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's introduced and returns just sitting on his couch waiting for the bat signal to show up.
I think so, yeah. Isn't he like just sit? Yeah, he's just like sitting on the couch, he like reads a book and occasionally looks up, right?
No, he's literally just sitting with his hand on his chin. In the dark, waiting. I mean, it's like one of those what they call like trailer shots, which is like it makes no sense in the movie, but it makes a great shot in the trailer, so you put it in there.
Yeah.
Super rich.
But
I
yeah,
wonder if
you know,
the editor just like forgot it, like they included in the trailer, but he just forgot. Be like, hey, should we take that out? Nah.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I appreciate it, and it's also one of my favorite things. It's one of the reasons I absolutely love Master of Phantasm, is it gives Batman a way out. Like, you know, I understand that it's a never-ending battle, but, you know, everybody's always like, why didn't he just give money to WWE, so why doesn't he just, you know, support this and that? And that's a reasonable question, but the answer usually is that no matter what he does, Gotham always takes from him, so he wants to give back. And that's why he continues to be Batman, which is why, Rachel was his way out until the Joker killed her. And I think that's where a lot of people's disconnect with The Dark Knight Rises comes in, and that like you would think that Batman would continue his mission and not sit in retirement for a decade.
I actually don't think that Bruce Wayne as a character separate from Batman even is worth exploring that much. He's just a shell, and I mean a lot of people have kind of come to the realization more and more nowadays, I think, than before. But Bruce Wayne is not the true character that he is. It's Batman is actually him. He as a person his
Bruce
true
Wayne
feelings are revealed as Batman. Bruce Wayne is just the shell that he portrays to the public.
See, I disagree with that. I've always thought that both of them were a mask and there's a guy in between. And I think usually the guy in between is what you see with Alfred and what you see with like Dick and, you know, the people he respect. Like you'll see that with Superman and stuff like that. Batman is kind of his, I mean, I guess if it's psychological, Batman would be like his super ego, and Bruce Wayne would be like his id, where that guy in the middle would be his ego, the guy you don't often see, but the guy who isn't like this gruff, I want to beat up everybody, but he's also not like this, you know, this flamboyant rich guy who buys hotels and gets drunk while not drinking and stuff like that. He actually, you know, he has things, but he doesn't know how to share that with people, except for Alfred, who's always been there for him, and somebody like Superman, who he respects. So you can't, you know, he can't put on the facade because Superman sees right through it.
Yeah, I think a valid point as well. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, this is on subject, but I think, you know, if you watch Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, just seeing their relationship, like, I mean, there's a scene where they literally just get coffee together or something like that, and that's them, you know, that's him being honest, that's him being earnest in a moment. It's not him being Batman, the gruff owner, because, you know, that's the running joke with the Justice League, is that Batman is not a member of the team. And he always comments that he's a part-time member, so he doesn't have to do the stupid stuff they do. But him with Superman, that's always, you know, like, that's when he has his lighthearted moments. That's when he can joke, you know, and that's when he can show himself. It's hard to kind of get that in between because you can't show with everybody. But you know, I would also think that he softens up to Gordon over the years.
Yeah, definitely. I think he portrays a lot of that to some degree to Gordon in the Dark Knight trilogy as well. More so to Alfred because he's more candid. He can be open about both sides to Alfred. But he definitely has an interesting dynamic with Gordon that I think makes Gordon a really cool character because of, I don't know, Batman has a lot of really cool allies because they're all inherently good people, essentially. In a society or in like a city like Gotham where, especially in the Dark Knight trilogy, it's highlighted that the city itself is inherently evil or corrupt. And I think that makes a really interesting set of allies for him, especially in the Dark Knight when you see all these people dropping like flies or siding with the Joker or giving into their psychotic inhibitions. There's people like Gordon who, through and through, almost to a cliched point, are like too good, too humanly good.
It's just like they place their faith in him like 100%. Like even
yeah, or they do things completely altogether, like, no human being is that pure-hearted, basically. Right. But it's very interesting to see.
Yeah, which is why I guess... I was going to say, I guess that's why Frank Miller had to ruin him by having him sleep with his co-worker.
I guess. I don't know. I think it's a shame to trash a character like that, because there's something just... There's something really interesting and almost, like, nice and sweet about a character like that who's so inherently good. It's kind of bad to see a corrupt side of them, or see a person want to corrupt them.
When he's good, I would just point out the Burton anthology and even the Adam West series, Commissioner Gordon was completely useless. Like, he just kind of stood around doing nothing. Especially in the Adam West series, where his OE role was to call Batman whenever anything crossed their desk. And they fly in the office. Do you know what that means, Chief O'Hare? The Batphone. And I'm like, yeah, go for it, I guess. You folks didn't even try to do police work before you caught it, dude. my favorite, one of my favorite scenes of Batman Forever, I think, is when he does the, when he Batman flies through the bat symbol, and Commissioner Gordon's on the roof saying, go, Batman, go! And he's waving his arms at him. I'm like,
oh, yeah. When, was it Bat? He does, like, the thumbs up.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Batman Forever is a treasure.
It's something.
It's a masterpiece.
It is certainly a movie.
It is something.
I don't know why, for some reason, I just like the idea, like, in the Batman movie, in the Schumacher Batman movie, of them just, like, running, eclipsing at the bat signal towards the end. For some reason, that's just always got me every time.
I love that scene, actually.
I'm not saying it's bad. It's just, for some reason, I just always like that.
Oh, yeah, I do, too. I think a lot of the films knew how to end iconically. I think, you know, like, the first one, of course, ends with the pan up to the roof, and the second one ends with the pan up with his Catwoman. The other two ends with him running.
Toward the signal.
Yeah. The Batman Begins end with him on the rooftop. I didn't say thank you, and you never will, and then he flies off the roof.
You'll never have to.
And the Dark Knight ends with him riding off into the distance. Mm-hmm. The only one that doesn't really have a strong one is the Dark Knight Rises, because it literally doesn't end on Batman.
Right.
But it ends on Alfred.
No, it ends on
Bruce Wayne.
It ends on Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
We're like Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
No, shut up.
Yeah, how I remember. Yes, but I can literally talk about Batman Forever. But I think
we can talk about Batman Forever, the movie.
Well, I bet that you
know we actually were already doing that.
But I was gonna say I do think it's time we start rapping, because it is like 1:30 my time.
We didn't talk about the Batman Lego sets.
I think you did, actually. You brought up the Tumbler.
Yeah.
There's the Tumbler, which is a $200 set, which has the Joker from The Dark Knight. Also, there's a set that's been released for 2015 that's got the Green Lantern in it, finally, and it's also got Sinestro in it, and it's also got Space Batman, and it's going to be awesome. It's $20. Oh, my God.
So, Batman. Basically, Batman.
I kind of tried to punctuate that as fast as possible for you guys.
I don't think there was any punctuation there, but that's okay.
Exactly. That was all in one breath, essentially.
Wait,
real quick. That's
before
right.
we go. Can everyone just do like their favorite Batman line?
I got mine.
Do it.
Where's Rachel?
I was gonna say
James or Earl, I don't care.
My favorite is Batman doesn't eat nachos.
Another place. Batman does not eat nachos.
Yeah, that's from Brave and the Bold as well.
We all gotta have joke answers.
I know, that's my favorite. Yeah. I have that.
No, I know. Where's Rachel's mine too? But like, have a joke answer.
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
What?
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Where's that from?
Adam West. 60s Batman movie. This is far as a bomb, but he's trying to find a place to throw it where it won't kill everyone. You know, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Yeah, it's a really huge running gag.
Yeah, he's literally running around carrying a gag.
Okay, all right.
Just all
right, mine.
I'll take drive-through.
What?
like at the beginning of Batman Forever, like after he sees that Alfred asks him what he wants for dinner, and it's just like this dramatic close up on his face, illuminated by shadow, and he's like, "I'll take drive through."
Are you sure that wasn't like a promotional commercial for Batman Forever Thai and McDonald's place?
Oh, it was a commercial that they put into an actual movie. "Can I persuade you to take a sandwich, sir? I'll get drive through." Yeah, that's my second favorite is, I guess, the more iconic one that most people would pick. "I am Vengeance. I am the Knight. I am Batman.
Do you know he actually did that for, like, a bunch of people, like, after 9/11 happened?
He does that all the time. Like, every time I see him at Comic-Con, which is, like, every year he does, that's, like, the first thing he does. And it's so funny, though. It's so iconic. I always just assumed it was from the comic books. I didn't know it was originally a thing from the cartoons.
Oh, was it actually from the cartoons?
Yeah. Like,
oh,
I Googled it to see the origin, and it's like, no, it's from the cartoon.
Oh.
It seems like something he would have said, though, doesn't it?
It's not who I am that defines me. It's what I do.
Swear to me.
That's a good Batman voice.
We will be back next week when I get to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy while they listen and hear all my spoilers.
And I'll talk about Kyle Chandler, right?
I can't stop.
We will talk about Kyle Chandler next week and Patrick Bateman.
This is a great Bateman cast.
Yes, this is real music. Dark, brooding, important, groundbreaking. Check out the lyrics. Darkness. No parents. Continued darkness. More darkness. Get it? The opposite of light. Black hole. Drawn in the basement, middle of the night, blacked out windows, other places that are dark, black suit, black coffee. You get it, that's just the first verse. Darkness. No parents. Super rich. Kinda makes it better.